Benefits Genius, podcast number one.
Hey, it's Howard Kettner, and this is a Benefits Genius milestone moment. You're here, and now we're launching Benefits Genius, podcast number one. You've had ready access to Benefits Genius videos, worksheets, and live events, but you asked me for more. You wanted audio that you could access from your mobile, while working out, or as you commute. So here we go. It's my pleasure to launch your brand new Benefits Genius podcast learning library. I just can't think of anyone better for our first guest than Dave Patriarch. Dave has quietly led the charge on a host of benefit plan initiatives and innovations that he's typically too humble to publicly acknowledge. But today, we're going to see what we can get him to share with us. Whatever it is, it will be enormously practical at a desktop level as you grow your business. Please join me in welcoming Dave Patriarch.
Dave, I'll have you play fill in the blanks if I misstate things along the way. You good with that?
I'm good.
Okay, so here's the way I tell the story. Dave founded Mainstay Insurance Brokerage in 1996 as a one-person shop specializing in providing employee benefits to small business in the Greater Toronto area. What I've learned now in the time that I've spent with you, Dave, is that you're an unbelievably strong believer in continuing education, and you recognize the need for the group insurance industry to broaden its efforts in that area. I'm just going to share with my audience that I met Dave because folks that I regard as thought leaders in the industry recognize Dave as their thought leader. And I don't know whether you know this or not, Dave, but you've got a bunch of folks out there claiming that you mentor them and you're their informal go-to resource for anything benefits. And just before I let Dave jump in, I'm going to brag for you, Dave, because you won't, but you participate in a host of industry think tank groups and panels like the Benefit Advisors Drug Plan Outlook, the Canadian Leadership Council on Drug Plan Partnerships. You're a member of the Sanofi Canada Healthcare Survey Advisory Board, and I'm going to point folks right now to your website. I hope your server's robust. mainstayinsurance.ca for some of you that want to read some of Dave's work. Dave, I know I missed a ton in there. Hopefully I didn't misstate anything too badly.
No, that's all good.
Awesome.
It's been a heck of a ride, that's for sure.
Well, I can only imagine, like what kicked off the thought process back there in 2003 for you, to start that little networking group?
So I was licensed about 20 years ago, and I'm one of the few people, I think, in the business that said, before I started, I want to get in, I want to get licensed, I want to sell group insurance and nothing but. And that kind of made me unique. And at the time in Ontario, we were just into level one and two licensing, so the career agency system was kind of being torn apart. And I ended up having to do this all on my own. And the impetus was really something simple, and that was, let's try and get together with a bunch of people that can help me learn, and we can kind of just share ideas and stuff. And it really started out with about four guys that used to get together, as you said, kind of irregularly. We'd play golf, grab some lunch, grab some breakfast from time to time, and try and kind of solve all the world's problems, you know, over a coffee. And it, as it grew, we just added more and more people to the group, and as a result, the kind of the demands on the group got bigger, and we became a little bit more formal. And then in 2011, as you mentioned, the CGIB was kind of established as its current format and running all the events. And it was a chance for the people from home to recreate maybe the career agency, some people call it that, I think it's more of just kind of creating a water cooler where you could sit down with peers and share ideas. And the goal was entirely selfish. It was just to learn as much as I could from about benefits from others around me. And so that was the goal. And as it's turned out, it's a two-way street. I mean, people ask me questions now, and I end up doing more research because I need to know the answer. And so I learn a ton, they learn a ton, and the more they learn, the more they challenge me. So it's been a great ride.
Well, and this is more than something that you do off the corner of your desk. I mean, what is your time commitment to this look like over the course of the year?
Yeah, I've never added up the hours because I'm kind of terrified that they keep adding up to too many. but generally, my quick answer to people is half my business hours go towards running Mainstay, which is my group insurance brokerage, and about a quarter of my hours add up to running CGIB, the events, the mentoring, and public speaking stuff, and panels and all that kind of stuff. So that takes care of about three quarters of my, you know, regular, you know, 40, 50, 60-hour work week at times.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, clearly you're passionate about it, and I think that's something, you know, it's so interesting, Dave. You know, I came into the business May 1, 1980, and I'm just, you know, I just wish that folks that were coming into the business today could experience what I experienced. I had so many people, I mean, folks that were officially my biggest competitors reach out to me and shepherd me and take me under their wing with that very unselfish attitude about the customer that writes all of our paychecks needs to be incredibly well served. And, you know, they reached out not in some sort of a parochial or pat on the head kind of thing. I mean, I was just a kid back then, and so they could have well been kind of a pat on the head. But it was the kind of deep love that says, you're actually doing this wrong, and you need to do it better, said with love.
Yep. And because they want everybody to be good. They want you to be good. They want the client to be good. I mean, I even joke around now, 20 years in the business, I go, let's mentor the young people so there's somebody there to buy our business when we want to retire down the road, and they're not going to, you know, mess it all up. So it is something that's been kind of lost along the way a little bit. And, you know, it's funny, one of the initial ideas when we put together the breakfast and formatted it was to have 20 people at a table and say, I want everybody to come and bring their best idea and give it away. I want them to bring their biggest challenge or maybe a technical problem or something and bring that to the table. And the idea was when you walk away, there'd be 19 people that gave you great ideas that you walked away with and 19 suggestions how to solve your problem or find some technical or whatever solution to it all. And in the old days, when you learned, in the old days, that's not very nice, I apologize, but back in the day, you kind of had this network around you, even if you didn't know you had it. And if you were in the career agency system, you had managers and, you know, competitors and the people beside you, the people around you were there all the time. But now, I mean, most of us are independent, home-based, small office-based, and you just don't get that 19 people around you in your day-to-day life to give you feedback. And so hence the need for the group and kind of how it kind of grew along a bit. And the need for education has never been greater than it is now.
Oh, isn't that the truth? It really is. And speaking of education that takes place in our industry, I just got back a little bit ago from the International Foundation of Employee Benefits, their Canadian conference down there in San Diego. And one of the themes that seem to be running through the presentations and dialogues that was conducted by a number of speakers is looking forward, what does the advisor of 2025 look like? So we've kind of looked back with some nonchalance and otherwise about, you know, on the last 25 or 30 years in the business and what took place. But what does the advisor need to look like over the next number of years as we do the run-up to 2025? What is your take on that?
In my opinion, everybody's got to get gooder. bad English, but I really think the we have to develop into better specialists. And if people have heard me or sat in seminars with me, I'm always saying we got to specialize. You got to be better and better and better to separate from everybody else. We got a lot of interesting challenges hitting us. We have insurance companies that don't really want to be insurance companies anymore. They want to be more transactional like banks. So we're watching products disappear and markets disappear and stuff like that. We're seeing the rise of robo-advisors in the individual side. And coming in 2017 or so, maybe early 2018, we're going to see group insurance benefits being dealt direct from the insurers. So we're going to see a lot of technology play a changing role. And we're also seeing things like HR and payroll and benefits being platform-oriented and web-based with advisors removed or minimized. So I think the broker of tomorrow has got to deal with all that stuff, and they've got to have some real value add to the relationship with the client. And it doesn't, I don't think, really come as a generalist. I think that we have to be able to connect to others around us that are specialists as well. But if we're not specializing, I kind of wonder if we're really doing the best thing for the client. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters, as you identified. They're the ones that, you know, are paying the bill, writing the check. They're who our client is. So I'm seeing as we go forward, we've got to be a bit more adaptable. We have to be a bit more open to change. And that can be something as simple as changing from traditional benefit plans, you know, the 80% health and dental and life and disability, to new plan designs like health spending accounts and hybrid plans and flexible plans. But I think it's more than just that. It comes down to, you know, how we operate, use of technology, and I think the clients are good with it. They're along for the ride, but they're willing to pay, but they want kind of more from the buck than just somebody, you know, sitting on the other end of the phone willing to take an order. And so, again, that whole specialty and value add, I think, is critical to those that want to survive in the next 20 years rather than just be the hobbyist, I think, is a term that's used quite a bit.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you raised the topic there of the robo-advisor, and it's such an interesting study to me in that, we've seen it in the U.S. and in Canada to some extent in the financial services industry. And the person that, again, writes all the paychecks, the client, obviously felt that there was a gap or a gain to be had, a gap to be addressed or a gain to be had is probably the way I should put it, by signing on with a robo-advisor. Whether that's Zenefits and some of its counterparts in the U.S. and those that we'll see in Canada, but which I think goes to your point of the generalist or the hobbyist just wasn't giving the client the service, or if they were, the client didn't understand that. Does that align?
Yeah, I was just recently doing a seminar, and one of the examples I used was about a client who asked me a question about waiving the waiting period on benefits. They'd made a great hire. They wanted to have them effective day one. They dropped me a quick email and just said, you know, is this okay if I waive the waiting period? And the quick answer and the robo answer was, yes, you know, tick off the box here, make it effective the date of hire, and continue on with your day. You know, have a nice day, sign off by the robo-advisor. But I really think the value that we add is behind that. So in this circumstance, this is a small company that I've had for years. They've never hired an employee before. It's a small family business. And so I called them up rather than emailed them back and said, what's going on? You just hired somebody new and you're waiving the waiting period. Yes, you can do that. But, you know, why is all this happening? Who's the person? What's the story? And we kind of threw some questions and back and forth. We found out that their reason for waiving the waiting period was this new hire was really concerned about doctor's visits and hospital bills and being stuck with a big bill. So I said, well, that's unusual. You know, people don't normally worry about that in Canada. Why? What's that coming from? And they said, well, he's from the States. And warning bells went off. and he's up here in Canada on a work permit, and so we're going to put him on our plan. So my question went, okay, are they on the government health insurance program, which is required? Do they have coverage, to replace that until they get through the waiting period of 3 months and so on? And so we ended up with a whole different conversation. No robo-advisor would ever get that out unless it was, 100 questions of, are they a full-time employee? Are they working this many hours? Do they have OHIP, or which government hospital insurance? I can't see the programming for every solution being there. So us being a little bit intuitive really kind of brings in the extra value to that whole thing, and that the robo-advisor are going to do a really good job at some of it, but not all of it. So going back to the hobbyist, I don't know if you can just be half good, because being half good or even good enough is going to put you on the same basis as the robo-advisor, and the robo-advisor can do it faster, cheaper, more effectively, with a better paper trail after the fact than you can any day. And my goal is never to fight against technology. It will always win. But my goal is to emphasize and extend and expand a relationship with a client, because that's one thing. Nobody gets, intimate with your software. I think that building the relationship with the client is what matters, and all this other stuff is what does it. So that'll separate the specialist from the generalist or the hobbyist or whatever.
Yeah, and so as I heard you go through that, what comes to mind for me is you've essentially helped us define the advisor that needs to be concerned about technology, and that is that advisor that isn't providing that additional value day to day.
100%, and I think it goes beyond that. It's not just not providing value. The ones that will suffer the most and the quickest will be ones that are commodity-driven right now. So they're all about the cheapest price. Well, when you go direct and you can pull out commissions, you just lost. You can't compete with that. And if it's about, like you said, not adding a huge amount of value on the service side, then you just lost to the robo-advisors. So let's compete somewhere where we can actually compete and, add value, build the relationship, rather than trying to compete on being, cheaper than almost free, and faster than a computer, and everything else. Let's compete where we can add some real value.
So let's talk about that for a minute. I mean, how are you threatened by the price conversation? I mean, what do the conversations look like that you have with your clients every day around price?
They're unusual. When I talk to any other broker, anyone who goes to my website, anyone who's kind of spent any time on my website, they go, it's kind of an unusual website. There's a page that says philosophy, and one of my things on the philosophy page is, I guarantee you, basically in writing, that my rates will not be the cheapest, and clients have to kind of buy into that, otherwise we don't work together. I don't hide it. I say it very first meeting. I'm about value added. I'm not about being cheap. The conversation doesn't come up. Everybody's price sensitive. But what I say to clients is, I'm going to try and get you the fairest pricing we can. It's not going to be the cheapest. It's not going to be the best. From year to year, you're going to pay too much, maybe a little bit better some years. But it's all about fair pricing. And so when we sit down, we have a quick conversation at the very beginning talking about, what we do, how we're trying to protect the client, how price and cost are two different things. The premium that you pay every month is one thing, but the liability that can be created from a lawsuit or somebody failing to have a benefit paid or something like that is huge. So let's try and kind of get past just the dollars and cents of it all and understand kind of what we're trying to provide with benefits. And also, one of the questions I ask clients very early on is, what do you think is a reasonable price from year to year for benefits? And it doesn't have to be a dollars and cents price, but do you think that, benefits being the same price year after year is reasonable? Because we know dentist fee guides go up every year. We know paramed practitioners go up. We know drug costs go up. We know new drugs enter the market at high cost. If you think that your rate should stay the same year after year just because, the cost of your product you sell stays the same, we're never going to work together. because it's just unrealistic. Real life, my block of business, it's on my website too, goes up about 4% per year, and it has so far about the past 15 years I've been tracking the numbers. And, you know, there's highs and lows, and definitely clients that see bigger increases and some with decreases. But I think we really have to align clients at the very beginning with what are we trying to do. And when you have that conversation and you do the education, the whole cost and monthly premium and rate increases become secondary. And it really changes the entire discussion altogether away from the commoditization, cheapest bottom line, to, you know, one about, you know, the whole product and what we're doing and all the other value add stuff. It's not just about money. The money's there, but it's way, way down the list.
Well, and yet I see on your website, I mean, you tackle the issues head on, and I love it. In fact, we'll guarantee that you won't have the lowest prices each year.
I couldn't say it any more forcefully than that, could I?
Well, I love it, because one of the things that you and I both observed in the industry is you could go from advisor site to advisor site, and if you just were able to play a little trick and move the faces and the names from site to site, they actually all look the same. Yours definitely doesn't look the same, and you tackle the money issue right on, like you said, in the so it's mainstayinsurance.ca, and then just go to our philosophy, and you couldn't swap this across to a lot, if actually any other site that I know of.
Well, and that's before you even get to the sailing, the boat, the pages on going sailing and boats and everything else. I always say there's not too many websites where the brokers are offering to take anybody sailing anytime, anywhere almost. So, but that's on there if people look around a little bit.
So, oh, for sure. And
differentiate.
And, well, absolutely. And back to the robo-advisor, like, is the robo-advisor going to take you sailing? And you know, we can kind of laugh at it and pass it off lighthearted, but people don't buy from spreadsheets, at least not yet. People like to buy from people that have a great deal of empathy for their situation. And I think when, as a community, we fail to express and articulate and show that we have that empathy for where the client is going. So when I see on your website here, these are our average increases, et cetera, you're reaching out and letting folks know that you live in their world, you're going to live and walk beside them for a long time, and this is what the journey is going to look like. So setting the expectations correctly, preventing disappointments, preventing unwanted surprises. And so while there's facts and figures on here, I think it's really a deep expression that you truly understand the world that your client lives in every day, and they're business people and they need to deal with real life, and let's let them have a glimpse of what that looks like right up front.
It's interesting. You picked up a few key things in there that I kind of say them a little different way. But it's a relationship. And when I meet clients or prospective clients, and I only take on one or two new clients a year, I've got a full practice with all the different things I do. And so I will have many referred to me from clients, from other brokers, from all over the world now. It's really interesting when they come to Canada. But anyway, so when they come, I say, okay, listen, this is a relationship. I don't want a one-night stand. I don't want you for 1 year and then have you flit off to another broker. I don't want you like a girlfriend or a boyfriend that's around for a few years until something more serious comes along. I want a wife for life. I want a relationship with you that we're going to look at the next 10 or 20 years together. Okay, I'm not limiting my wife to the 10 or 20 years. She knows that. But but I want a long-term relationship that we can work together and understand, because there's going to be good days and bad days, like, you know, like a marriage, like any relationship. And there's going to be days where we have god-awful renewals. The claims are through the roof. People have died. There's disabilities. There's you know, astronomically high drug costs, and there's going to be great times where the rates fall through the floor because everybody's cured and healthy or, you know, whatever. And so those ups and downs we got to be able to deal with and kind of look at it as we're in something long term. And I think too many people, both commodity, hobbyists, everything else, tend to be driven by they're just looking for the one-night stands. If I can have a client for a year, I'm happy. And at the end of the year, I'll try and keep them for another year. And what I say to those brokers is, you know what, if you just pre-sold next year's renewal now, when you're doing the first sale, you wouldn't have to worry about another sale. You could just do it once. And but somehow that kind of there's kind of a bit of a fearfulness, I think, from advisors when it comes to talking to their clients. They almost cringe when the phone rings rather than seeing it as another opportunity to connect. And I think that's a shame because I think we're missing some great opportunities to connect with clients, not just, you know, at the bad times, at renewal times and at claim times, but, you know, along the way as their companies grow and evolve and all the different things happen along the way. So it's never a boring business, that's for sure.
Well, it's not. And you know, again, as we look at a run out to 2025, and I may be asking you a bit of an unfair question now, but you sit on kind of more boards, committees, and have more inside information, perhaps, than certainly the bulk of the community that I interact with on a day-to-day basis. Do you see your website page here that I'm zeroed in on kind of in the Our Philosophy section, do you see that as being vastly different 8 years from now?
Wow, that's a great question. I have to go back and read it. You've been reading more of my website than I have been lately. You know what? It's interesting. I've got a 15-year-old son that's convinced he's going to come and take over my business in about 10 years. So not too long after that window, he's going to bring it into the next century, millennium or something, and take over the world, become a billionaire. I don't know if materially things would change that dramatically. I think the core principles of kind of what I'm about and stuff would be the same. I think putting the clients first and educating will always be the same. Will I say that the, you know, the pricing will always guarantee be not the best? Absolutely. You know, you have to switch companies every day, but I can always find somebody a cheaper price, and that's not the way to go. I would hope it's the same. I definitely know along the way I've learned more, and I've tweaked a few things. I'm more selective in who I take as clients now. I take probably about 1 in 4 clients that are referred my way, and it's really got to be a really close alignment, and that has definitely changed over the past 15 years. So the first 5 years I was learning, but over the past 15 years I've kind of targeted that, you know, more and more and more to be very, really, really closely aligned with what I want. So it's a two-way street. It's just like a job interview. I say to clients, you know what, I'm going to give you all my rules. I'm going to give you every reason why you may not want to deal with me up front, and then we're going to talk about your plan second. And so we have to be aligned right from the very beginning. And that's quite shocking to people. Just like the website is a little bit different, that initial meeting really sets clients kind of back on their heels a little bit, because I don't go in asking for a copy of the booklet, a copy of the claims experience, and a census. If they have that stuff ready, I push it to the side and I go, why do you have all that ready? What's going on? How many brokers have you spoken to? How many times have you shopped this plan? Let's have a conversation about the things that really matter, and they're not in the booklet, the census, or your claims data. And so we changed the conversation from the very beginning.
You know, Dave, if for folks that are tuned into this, you know that they're hitting the rewind button right now and just going back over the last 3 minutes and going, did we actually hear somebody say that?
Yeah.
What do you mean? What do you mean? You're accepting 1 out of 3 or 4 referrals. I don't get referrals. And you're accepting 1 out of 3 or 4? Like, how is that working? And if they have the data ready, no, I usually grab that and I run like crazy.
You've got to
step us through what that looks like. Like, when you walk into somebody's office, like, is that what really happens?
Well, so first of all, you got to understand, I'm 6'7", about 280 pounds, and I'm normally in cowboy boots, jeans, and a button-down shirt. So when I walk in the door, they kind of go, are you the AV guy, the HVAC guy, or are you the insurance broker I was expecting, and because they can't believe that's the case. So, I mean, I don't look like the average guy walking in the door. So I'm really lucky in that I've got great relationships all over the place. So first, from where the referrals come from, they come from property and casualty business insurance brokers, both locally and abroad. They come from brokers in the U.S., where I give them my clients that are opening up U.S. offices to handle. They give me their Canadian offices. I have brokers across Canada that may not be licensed in this province. So just the other day I got a call from a guy in Alberta. He's heard me speak a bunch of times and said, look, I've got a client that has a spin-off company starting in Ontario. I'm not licensed there nor interested, and I'd love you to take care of them. And vice versa, I've done that to other brokers and passed business along when they've changed provinces. So I'm really lucky in that I've got this kind of really neat referral stream. And even better is my old clients that I've lost along the way. So I've had situations where my plan administrator leaves and goes to another company, and then, you know, 2 years later I get a phone call saying, hey, we'd love you to come in and do our benefits. So the referrals come from all different sources, and I haven't made a cold call in 8 years, maybe 9 years now, which is really great. I made warm calls during that time period and followed up with people, but I haven't made a cold call. And so when somebody comes to me, I'm very forward and say, like, I've got some rules. And my rules, I talk about them all the time. I only do mandatory enrollment plans, none of this 75% participation. Everybody's got to be on the plan, and here's why. And we talk about how it protects them, how it protects the employees, how it's the right thing to do for a lot of reasons, for rates, for everything. I won't do subcontractors on plans. I want full-time permanent employees, not quasi-employees and stuff, and we go through all those reasons. And I kind of say, after I've gone through my list of things, and say, okay, if none of those are aligned with you, tell me right now and I won't waste any more of your time. But before we go any further, that's what it's all about. And so in there, we'll talk about rates and all that kind of stuff as well, just, you know, where things are going in the future. And I do a lot of educating during that kind of conversation, because when you say you won't, you know, you only do mandatory, their next question is, well, why? I have 75% of my people in the plan. That meets the contractual obligation of the plan. And I go, yeah, it does. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just I won't have a client in that boat, and we explain why. And I think it really changes the whole dynamic of the conversation right from the very beginning. So by the time we finished an hour, we haven't talked about plan design generally. We haven't talked about claims experience or anything else. And we've changed the game a bit. Interestingly, there's one thing that I do before that meeting. And when I get the first phone call, sometimes it's email, but generally it's a phone call, I ask one question. That is, why are you calling me today? What caused, what changed in your world that caused you to call me? Did a relationship break down? Did somebody just, you know, maybe you didn't have a plan before, and did somebody just get sick or become disabled? What created the call today? Because once you get there, then you understand the motivation behind people, and you have a way better idea of what your starting ground is, rather than start data collection and then find out later on, well, you know, one of the partners is off on disability and one's on a $100,000 a year drug, and, you know, oh, by the way, all the work you just did isn't going to work. Because it doesn't fit, it's not sustainable, the insurance company will turn it down when they find out there's a big claim, or, you know, whatever. So it really is a unique, like I said, I'm very lucky. I've got great people who refer business, I've got great clients that choose to work with me and continue to choose to work with me over the years. And as a result, it means my life is a little bit more balanced. I'm always busy. But it means I can also take a bit more time and go sailing. And my clients are good, and they come sailing with me sometimes. So it does. It is a different model, but I really think just about everybody can do it if they just kind of set themselves upright and just kind of evolve into that relationship with their clients.
You know, I can't imagine that there's a member of our audience that's enjoying this podcast that wouldn't aspire to be where you're at, and wouldn't aspire to have the industry having that sort of approach. And so, I mean, you interact with not dozens, but hundreds of other advisors year in and year out. And as we think about this, the ideal advisor situation in 2025, what issues are you most passionate about?
So it kind of goes in a couple of different circles. So education is number one above all else. The whole conversation of getting better, getting gooder, is huge because it drives so many other things. So I've been working with the Ministry of Health in Ontario to coordinate claims between insurers and the province, more like BC PharmaCare. Mm-hmm. And by understanding the entire industry better, we can influence change and we can make the entire marketplace better. So I kind of keep looking out to the next generation that's coming into this business and how fast they are and how quick they are with technology and everything else, and go, we need all these people to raise the standards higher, to get into more areas that are beyond just our normal day-to-day kind of order taking, and make our business better than what it is today. And I've totally forgotten the question. That's embarrassing.
Oh, not at all. Just in terms of
the phone
of passion,
turned me off there.
And,
sorry.
Yeah, no worries. And like you and I have had some conversations about the generalist versus specialist kind of thing, and that struck me again as so profound. I mean, I think my grandfather, my great grandfather, probably went to old Doc Sawbones for absolutely everything.
Yeah.
And now we kind of expect that if it's anything more than a hangnail, that our trusted GP is going to do something to get us some specialized help around issues.
And that GP, the family doctor, is the generalist broker. And if they're good enough to understand the situation to forward everybody to those specialists, like you're saying, then they have a lot of value in the relationship. The problem is we try and be brain surgeons 1 minute, heart surgeons the next, endocrinologists the next, you can't do it all. Like, doctors can't do it all. You can be a good GP. You can be a great family doctor. But a big part of being that great person is knowing how to refer people off. And I'm okay. Everyone kind of goes, oh, you're trying to make everybody a specialist. No, not everybody's going to be a specialist. And if you're in a smaller town, then you know what? You are going to be a bit more of a generalist just in the relationships you have around you. But that said, with technology the way it is, everybody's reach is a lot bigger. And so I really think that generalists will always survive to some extent. But if you really want to build a great practice where people come to you, and you hit it perfectly earlier when you said you can go to 20 websites or whatever and change the names and faces and they're all similar and offering the same, either savings or the same, value add or whatever. I really think that if you become that specialist that everybody wants to go to, they'll come to you. And the interesting part is, we haven't talked about this very much, by the fact that I specialize in doing nothing but employee benefits, anyone who's selling life insurance or living benefits or doing investments, they don't see me as a threat at all. I'm not. I don't sell those products. So if you throw a client my way, I'm not about to come back and kind of take over their group RSP or do the buy-sell for the owner. That specialist focus means I'm not competition to 99% of the industry. And that, breeds more referrals and, less kind of less head-to-head problems with other brokers.
Again, I'm totally intrigued by your approach and philosophy around that.
Well, then come sailing with me someday.
Yeah, exactly.
Or whenever you're in town.
Believe me, I will pick you up on that, because what I observed happened in the industry over the decades is that there was a lot of camaraderie, and it seemed to me, and maybe it was just in my little part of the world, but there was more cooperation, meaning I actually sat down and counted it up. I had 12 joint venture relationships at various times over the years when I was definitely had no qualifications beyond old Doc Sawbones, the generalist. And so I would bring a specialist in, and sometimes there was a commission split, sometimes there wasn't, sometimes there was something else. And that law of reciprocity, it seemed, really kicked in. I mean, I experienced it firsthand. A fellow reached out to me and asked me to come in and get engaged as a specialist. And that happened several times, actually. But one in particular, we hit it off very strongly, and he was a little closer on his run to retirement than I was, and I ended up buying him out over the course of 3 or 4 or 5 years, and it was this wonderful, wonderful buyout arrangement that I took him out incrementally over years. He continued to nurture the clients, provide the best of the best, and I couldn't have asked for a better situation. But it was that generalist specialist referral thing that went to work. And if there's something that I'm passionate about in the same way you are, it's about advisors working more closely together, taking down some of the walls that have just grown. Nobody intended for them to grow, but it's just like a garden gone crazy somehow.
Yeah, and you make some good points. I give away a lot of business, and for years I used to kind of always second guess it because so many people were critical of me for doing it. I give away my disability insurance top up stuff. I give away all the life insurance the owners want, the buy and sell, all the stuff I'm licensed to sell, and probably competent enough to sell. But I give it away to other people. No commission sharing, no referral fees. I give it away to people that I think are passionate about those areas of business, and many of them. Or some of them will throw business back my way. No quid pro quo. We don't keep a spreadsheet of who owes what or anything like that. But to me, it's if I can connect you with other people that will do the things I don't do well or that I don't do at all, then you know you're much further ahead. And they deserve all the money. Just like I say to them, if they refer a business and say, like, I'd like to split the commission, I just say thank you very much, but I'm going to take the responsibility, the liability, and drive the relationship. I get paid for all of it. I'm sorry. If you want to entrust your client to me, fantastic. They'll be yours for life. But, you know, at the end of the day, when it comes to group benefits, they're going to be my client. And a lot of people seem to be afraid of giving away that and getting those relationships. But I really think once you're around for a little while, you know, just as you did, even newer to the business, you start to kind of realize those people that have value around you that are supporters and mentors and specialists in other areas. And you may go to them to learn in the beginning, but at the end you kind of go, you know what, I'll never learn as much as they know. I'd rather just give them the business and do what I do in my own way. And I think that's been missing. You're right.
Well, and I think that what you've shared in the past half hour or so, I think, is an outstanding case study on what's practical, what's realistic, and what's possible in this business. And I have to say again, I was absolutely intrigued from our very first conversation. And I hope, Dave, that this is the first of many conversations that we share out with the advisor audience. And I just want to say a huge thanks on behalf of myself and also on behalf of the Benefits Genius audience for helping us launch the podcast journey. And
my pleasure. Thanks for having me as part of it. I'm game if you are. People want to listen. Fuck.
Well, there will definitely be probably a never-ending stream of invitations from before that, Dave. So that's fabulous. And to our audience, thanks for joining Dave and me for the launch. And here's sincerely hoping that today's dialogue is part of building our collective bigger future. That's why we're doing this. Thanks, everybody.